Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Marvel Chronology episode, and it's also part of our 12 days of the Comic Source. We're going to be continuing the Thanos reading order. So for those not familiar, the Marvel Chronology Project is a project where we go in and chronologically explore the history of a character or an event or a specific timeline or even a creator's chronology and read their work in, I guess in that case, it would be in publication order. Most of the time when we do a character, it's in chronological order. So if there are, books and stories that appear or take place earlier in a character's lifetime, we read them out of the publication order in the order that it makes most sense as far as the chronology of the character and the development of the character. So we've been exploring Thanos for a while now, and we're up to Warlock number 9, where Thanos sort of first reappears after the events that happened in the Captain Marvel series, which is really the first time we see Thanos. And Jim Starlin takes the reins of the character, and he starts to become the character we know today from the MCU and various titles that he's had. So last time on the Marvel Chronology, we talked about Thanos Annual 1, which was actually published, I think, in 2010, but fits back in that 70s timeline where all these other cosmic stories from Jim Starlin were written. And I absolutely love Thanos Annual 1. It's kind of rare where a creator can go back and fit something in retroactively and have it be as seamless as what Starlin and Ron Lim did there. So really encourage you to go and check that out. It explains how Thanos survived the end of the events of Captain Marvel number 33 and how he ends up showing up next in Warlock number 9. So before we get into the issue itself, I want to give everybody a real quick and dirty explanation of who Adam Warlock is. Some of you may not be familiar with him. He first appeared in Fantastic Four number 66. He was created to be kind of the perfect human life form by a group of scientists called the Beehive. And supposedly they were going to mass produce them to create this army to take over the world. And it was so interesting, especially being Fantastic Four, number 66 back in the 60s. Cause we're talking about this idea of creating a race of perfect humans, which would be a good thing, but the scientists were planning on using that race to sort of gain power themselves. So benevolent dictator, I guess, would be the kindest way to talk about what their aspirations were. But their plan backfired, and I guess if they'd stopped to think about it, they would have realized. So basically what happens is Adam Warlock is born. He's not called Adam Warlock at that time. He's called Him. And because he was basically created to be perfect, he was also morally good. And so he sensed that ultimately what the Beehive, this group of scientists, was going to do to him and what he wanted him to do. It's so funny to talk like him and him. So what they wanted the pre-Adam Warlock to do was ultimately evil. It wasn't right. They were taking away freedom from the masses, from society. So the pre-Adam Warlock turns on his masters and he defeats him, but he doesn't have a lot of life experience. So, what happens next? Well, he starts looking for somebody to mate, primal urge of all living beings, and eventually encounters Sif, who at that time was Thor's girlfriend, and pre-Adam Warlock, basically kidnaps her, tries to mate with her. Obviously, Thor doesn't take too kindly to this, and he beats the crap out of pre-Adam Warlock, basically. And so in order to survive, pre-Adam Warlock spins a cocoon and launches himself into space to sort of regenerate. Some months later, the cocoon is found by the High Evolutionary, who, similar to the Beehive group of scientists, is a geneticist, very advanced. And you would almost think that pre-Adam Warlock, or Him, was a creation of the High Evolutionary. And some people get it mixed up and think that he is, but he's not. although the High Evolutionary did find him and sort of gave him purpose, because he gives Adam Warlock the kind of the name Adam Warlock. He gives him the soul gem, gives him a new outfit, and he sends him to Counter-Earth. Now, Counter-Earth was an Earth that the High Evolutionary created, where he wanted to have a society that resembled Earth, but to be kind of utopia. And so theoretically, we weren't aware of its existence because it was exactly opposite our Earth's orbit. So the sun would always be between, and we would never see it. It would always be an eclipse, basically. And what's happened is the High Evolutionary's Counter-Earth has become contaminated by some of his other creations, the Man-Beast. So the being that was previously known as him, that's now known as Adam Warlock, goes to Counter-Earth to cleanse it of evil, to prevent the High Evolutionary from destroying it, because he's looks at it as a failed experiment. He's ready to pull the plug on it. So the High Evolutionary says, okay, and that's when he gives him the soul gem and what have you. And so for the next couple of years, Adam Warlock goes to Counter-Earth, and he fights the Man-Beast and tries to free that world. And that's really where Adam Warlock starts to become the character that we know. So, you know, he's died and been resurrected several times over his history, but he does eventually end up freeing the Earth from the Man-Beast, and then leaves that Earth on his goal to eradicate evil from the universe. And it's at that point that Jim Starlin takes over the character, first in Strange Tales and then in the Warlock series. So previous to Jim Starlin writing Adam Warlock, which starts with issue 9, there are 8 issues of a series that stars Adam Warlock called The Power of Warlock. But those were published earlier. So it's kind of interesting when if you pick up the first Starlin issue, it's issue 9, and it's called Warlock instead of just Power of Warlock. And it says on the top, premier, you know, issue, which is strange to see on a number 9, but it's because of the way that the timelines went. And back then, you didn't want a number 1. It's the opposite of today. You didn't want a number 1 on a comic. You wanted it to have a higher number. So it seems like it had longevity. And this was all because of the distribution model. You know, you're distributing on newsstands and such. So people wouldn't take a chance on something new because it might not sell. But if something had already been out and was sustaining itself well enough in the publishing world to have multiple issues, then newsstands and news distribution organizations that put out magazines and comics would have more faith in it. So it is kind of interesting. So anyway, in the pages of Strange Tales, that's where, like I said, Jim Starlin starts to basically flesh out the character. In I think it's Strange Tales 177, he recaps everything that's happened. He starts introducing new characters and new antagonists for Warlock. He comes up with this idea of the Universal Church of Truth, which is led by the Magus, who we find out is kind of the evil version of Adam Warlock himself, or is an evil version of Adam Warlock. There may be multiple versions of Adam Warlock, but this one is insane, and he leads the church and he wants to rule the universe. So that's kind of where, I mean, and there's so much more to Adam Warlock's history, but that will give you enough background to not be completely lost when we dive back into the story of Thanos, which is what we're going to do right now in the pages of Adam Warlock number 9. As I said, Jim Starlin is continuing the story that he started in of Adam Warlock that he started in Strange Tales here in issue 9, with the pulse pounding premiere label on it, and it's Warlock. So now at last in his own senses shattering mag. So Jim handles the writing, the coloring, and we have Steve Lea Aloha on inks and Tom Orzechowski on letters. Len Wein editing, but just like on the Captain Marvel series, Starlin's doing all the heavy lifting here. So This is called the Infinity Effect, the story. So you may, and I think this is the first time we see the word infinity used in a Starlin story, which obviously comes to have, you know, massive implications and meaning later on with the Infinity Gauntlet and the Infinity Stones, as they're originally known in the MCU, Infinity Gems in the Marvel Comics, Infinity Crusade, Infinity Gauntlet, Infinity War, all those stories. So continuing, as I said, from the story originally started in Strange Tales, we see Adam Warlock confronting the Magus, who's sitting on his throne on the homeworld of the Insidious Universal Church of Truth. We're in the palace itself. We see Gamora, the green-skinned adopted daughter of Thanos, would-be assassin. We've got Pip the Troll. We have Adam Warlock himself. And addressing them, sitting on the throne, is Magus, the evil version of Adam Warlock himself. So as they're confronting the Magus, he's saying, I am the butterfly that this golden caterpillar will metamorphose into. The language is spectacular. And Magus is silver skinned with an afro, as opposed to the gold skin Adam Warlock, who's got the blonde feathered hair. And Adam Warlock saying, no, I'm nothing like you. You're a cold-blooded tyrant. You think yourself a god. You've caused all this suffering. You're a cancer on the universe. I could never be you. And he attacks the Magus, and Magus is just too powerful. He's constantly just toying with Adam Warlock throughout the whole issue. And Magus feels, okay, now it's time to explain to you why you can't stop this from happening. It's already has happened. And just my mere existence proves that this is what will happen. So he decides to do his best impersonation of a Bond villain and start to explain to Adam Warlock exactly how he comes to be. He tells him how you're nothing more or less than the powers of chaos and order want you to be. Those two very powerful entities, of cosmic entities of the Marvel universe. Like, they selected me to wear the mantle of godhood, and you don't have any choice. You will become me. It's your destiny. Pulling lines from Back to the Future now. It's your destiny. But Adam Warlock continues to argue, no, I'll never be as evil as you. And it's very well done from Starlin. It's the angst. It's a little wordy, like Starlin's early work tends to be. But the angst is great. And Magus is just, like I said, toying with him, even to the point of when Adam cries out, like, no, how can this be? Adam, or Magus rather, saying right along with him, which is him saying, wait, what are you doing? Well, I'm merely repeating the words I once spoke in ignorance. As for how this happened, let me go ahead and tell you the answer. So he starts to explain. He explains how he recruited a young girl to become the matriarch, the apparent leader of the Universal Church of Truth, even though Magus was always kind of the power behind the throne. He's like, I knew this girl would betray me, and that suited me, because basically I just needed her to lure you here. And then once I did that, I could set my plan in motion. So what's going to happen is, a few moments from now, the in-betweener is going to come, and he's going to take you away. Meanwhile, Pip the Troll and Gamora are observing this, and Pip is saying, do something, Gamora, do something. Like, what are you just standing around for? And she says, I can't, but I believe it's time you became involved. She's like goading him on, and Pip's like, okay, I'm gonna give it a try. So, but he's a troll. He doesn't really even have any powers. He runs up to the Magus, and Magus backhands him, knocks him out. It's not really even a fight at all, but it is pretty funny when Pip charges, he says, all right, world, look out, because here comes Pip the God Basher. And, it's almost like that scene in Indiana Jones, just a, casual flick of the hand, like, get away, you bother me. And Pip's knocked out. But what's interesting here is that Magus says, okay, great, now we're alone, Adam Warlock, and I can tell you the origin, the story of how you go from being Adam Warlock to becoming who I am, the Magus. We're like, wait, how is it that you think it's just the two of you? What about Gamora? She's standing right there. And we see Gamora begin to converse with somebody. And she thinks, that's exactly what I wanted to hear you say, Magus. That means that my camouflage is working and I must clear my thoughts and reach out into the void. I must search out and touch his mind with mine. And we see that she's communicating with somebody, Master, and they have this chat. And it's clear that whoever she's talking to knows what's been transpiring in the throne room. And it's not yet time for Gamora to strike, but she clearly is working on behalf of this Master. And obviously us knowing what we know now about Gamora working for Thanos and you know, being his adopted daughter, that's who the Master is. But at the time, that hadn't been revealed yet by Starlin. Gamora had showed up in those Strange Tale issues that starred Adam Warlock, but her connection to Thanos had not yet been revealed to the reader. So they don't have any idea who this might be. You know, being that it's Starlin, maybe some people suspected, maybe not. Maybe they thought it was a new character. Either way, Gamora bides her time as the disembodied voice says, wait until the moment we've agreed upon for the Magus's godlike senses to be breached. It's got to be a complete surprise. But when the point in time arrives, strike with every cunning every ounce rather of speed and strength you have, the very fate of the stars rest upon you. So meanwhile, Magus is continuing to tell the story, talking about how in a few minutes, I'm going to bombard your body with harmless radiation, but that radiation is going to serve as a beacon and the heavens will open up and the in-betweener will come and he will take you and kidnap you to his realm. And there you will learn what it's like to be in the land between reality and illusion, between time and space. And you're going to float there for centuries, unable to do anything but just exist. And that's where you'll learn the dark secrets and about the power of chaos and order. And it's where I learned the things. And it's where I learned that there's no such thing as good and evil. Those are nothing more than ideas created by man to control man. And really, the great division isn't right or wrong, but it's having purpose or being dead. And when I was there and I was floating, eventually I created a cocoon for myself to try to protect myself. And as those whispers, as those secrets became revealed to me, the only reality I had was madness. And so thus evolved, which I don't know how going insane is being evolved, but apparently to the Magus it is, said I returned to this reality and I burst forth from my cocoon as the Magus, but I didn't appear in the future, even in the present time. I actually came back thousands of years in the past and I found myself upon this world. And that is where, even though it was an advanced society, they were very superstitious. And so using my powers, I was able to defeat the ones that attacked me. And I had even, you know, greater powers than when I first entered the cocoon in the reality of the in-betweener. I had evolved. And those survivors from this world that were left fell down in worship to me because I clearly was so powerful. You know, I became their god. And with their aid, I conquered all the neighboring worlds, and within a year, I was their ruler and their god, and we created the church of universal truth. Because, after all, what good is a god without a church? And like most religions, what it was important to do was to keep spreading the word. So, we went out and we conquered even more worlds. And now I rule over thousands of worlds. And someday I'll rule over all living creatures throughout the galaxy. And then he goes on to explain in preparation for this, how he recruited the matriarch that we talked about earlier, because he knew that she would be able to lure Adam Warlock. Because again, it's all a big loop, right? Like Adam Warlock's future is the Magus's past. So he remembers this happening. And so he recruited the woman who would eventually become the matriarch and knows that she would eventually betray him, but that's all to his plan, to the Magus's plan. So Adam Warlock hears this and he's like, okay, well, tell me, Magus, did I do this last time around? And he attacks the Magus, and the Magus was like, yep, you sure did. This is exactly the way I acted. I reacted to your efforts. And he once again strikes down Adam Warlock. Again, the difference in power makes the Magus' advantage really hard for Adam Warlock to overcome. So he goes ahead and shoots him with the radiation, but it's going to be a little while before the in-betweener shows up and takes Adam Warlock away to the, that alternate reality, or that place between places, between time and space, between reality and illusion, where he eventually evolves into the Magus. So in the meantime, Magus is going to have a little more fun and play with Adam Warlock in a game of tag, but not just any game of tag, in a warped reality. Magus uses his powers to start like literally bending reality, like the walls become warped, and gravity is not working the way it normally would, and things are out of proportion, like the physical laws of the universe have been changed here. Really, it's just a way for Jim Starlin to have fun doing the backgrounds, and like the floor is a semicircle, and we've seen Starlin use this style many times in his Captain Marvel run previously, where reality gets distorted and things are all out of whack, anatomy and what have you. So it's not too much fun for Adam Warlock. Again, it's just the Magus toying with him, always out of reach, and Adam Warlock not able to touch him. Meanwhile, Pip the Troll has regained consciousness, and he's speaking to Gamora saying, I don't know what you're waiting for, but Adam needs your help really bad. And I'd help him myself, but I'm going to be busy for the next few minutes. And you can see he's getting sick, like it's motion sickness or vertigo or something from the crazy reality and wall shifting and things not being the way that they are. He doesn't have a constitution to kind of hold up to the warping of reality. And Gamora again says, hey, my time has not come. She's communicating with the master again. And he's saying, correct, Gamora. The Magus is so sure that all that happened before will happen again, just as it has. But he doesn't realize that we've introduced you, this foreign element, into the reality. So wait until he's completely engrossed with the summoning. The in-betweener is about to arrive. And then use that special dagger that I gave you to slay Magus. This is everything that you've trained for. And as he's saying that, he's saying, now is the time. The moment is upon us. And we get a countdown of 12 seconds. And just as the Magus shoots Adam Warlock again with one more burst of radiation to bring about the final summoning of the in-betweener, Gamora attacks. And just like with Pip the Troll, Magus just backhands her and she's out with one punch. And he says, even this injection of a new element, this jade demoness into my reality, it couldn't change the outcome. Luckily, my astral senses pierced her camouflage at the last moment and stopped her from ruining my plan. So I'm going to leave you with these three thoughts, Adam Warlock. Remember, there's no escape from the in-betweener. To the Green Lass, return to whoever your master is and tell him the Magus is now aware of him, and I will deal with him in due time. And to Pip the Troll, if I ever see your face again, I'm going to step on it. And he walks off, and he doesn't have to imprison them. He doesn't have to stop them. He doesn't have to do anything. He can just turn his back on them and walk away because he's that much more powerful than they are. So then Adam, in a fit of angst, is talking to his companions. And they're telling him not to worry. They'll figure out something. And he says, worry? Why should I worry? I'm about to become a god. I'll be, more powerful than you've ever known me to be. And, back on Counter-Earth, they thought that I was a messiah. I was sent there to deliver them from evil. If they could only see me now, I couldn't even save myself from myself. And he's lamenting on the things, the mistakes that he's made in the past, and how the soul gem has turned him into a spiritual vampire, but at least people will worship him. He'll have the power to do anything he wants. but the only price he has to pay for that is his humanity. And, you know, from the entire time of Adam Warlock, even before Starlin got a hold of him, from the time he was created as him, Adam Warlock has been very much tied to his humanity. It's what makes him who he is, right? His humanity, his empathy. It's what caused him to rebel against his original creators, the Beehive. It's what gave him the strength to fight evil on Counter Earth. So he really is losing, you know, everything that he is if this actually happens the way that it's predicted by the Magus, the way it actually happened for the Magus. So meanwhile, the Magus is elsewhere in the palace, and he sentences the matriarch who betrayed him to death so she can be a saint of the church. And the official story will read, "Matriarch gives life to protect church from infidel warlock." And she really gets kind of a raw deal. I mean, yes, she's evil because she was the ruler of the Church of Universal Truth, and she did it, you know, for selfish reasons. And she was very ambitious, and she did betray the Magus. You know, even she's on the side of bad, and she can't even just be content with that. She's got to even double cross the Magus. But in her defense, that's what the Magus needed her to do. But, you know, obviously he can't have his followers seeing that she did that. So he tells one of his bishops to be sure that the populace knows about the story about how she gave her life, and it will increase the power of the church by knowing that their former leader gave her life, you know, to try to protect the church and to protect them. And then he tells him, then send your black knights to liquidate everybody in room 7 of sub-basement 2. And he thinks to himself, I don't expect these black knights to be able to kill Adam Warlock, but they should at least keep him busy for the next 3 hours until the in-betweener gets here. So meanwhile, back in that chamber, Pip's like, you know, I hate to be the one to say this, but it kind of looks like the universe's great golden hope has gone to pieces. And Gamora says, yeah, I better inform my master, see what we should do next. And all of a sudden the disembodied voice says, there's no need, Gamora. I've been observing this whole process with utmost interest, and I've determined the best course of action in the situation. Stand back. I'm about to phase into your sphere of existence, and I'll personally take control of the situation. I had hoped to avoid this, but I apparently have severely underestimated the Magus's power, and I have other things that need my attention, but this is too important. I'm going to have to introduce a new element into the Magus's fantasy / reality that he's not going to be able to just dismiss with the back of his hand, which obviously is a, you know, in reference to Magus easily using the back of his hand to slap down Pip the Troll and then Gamora herself. So as this portal opens, we see a boot step through. And as we turn the page, Thanos is there in all his might saying, I assure you, Thanos is such an element. I will not be dismissed with a simple back of the hand from the Magus. And he reminds her, I'd hope to avoid personal involvement because I have so many other important matters right now that scream for my attention. But all those plans depend on Warlock's continued well-being. And so I'm forced to intervene. I can't have him kidnapped and put in the reality of the in-betweener, that in-between space between time and space, between reality and illusion. So Thanos now stands with you, Adam Warlock, and I'm prepared to fight to the death. And that's where the issue ends. We get the little blurb. Next, Warlock and Thanos battle side by side against a world. So like I was saying before, nobody had previously known about the connection between Gamora and Thanos. So, you know, when you get this full page spread on the final, or nearly full page spread on the final issue of Adam Warlock number 9, it's kind of a surprise for people. Like, oh, wait, Thanos didn't die. He didn't get destroyed at the end of Captain Marvel number 33, as it appeared to have happened. And then, like I said before at the top of the episode, where Starlin went back and explained how Thanos was able to survive his apparent destruction at the end of Captain Marvel 33, and then is able to show back up here. So not a huge surprise, I guess, for some fans back then of Starlin who were following along, but this is really the classic, just like the Captain Marvel arc was so instrumental in being the definitive run and establishing who Captain Marvel became in the Marvel universe. And really it's all Thanos's story. Now Starling's doing the same thing for Adam Warlock here, and who better to do it with except for Thanos. But Thanos is going to be fighting alongside Adam Warlock. So this is the first time that we see that Thanos isn't as simple as just the mustache twirling villain he appeared to be in Captain Marvel. Yes, he's out for his own gain. He's out to do what he wants to do, and he's not going to answer to anybody. But sometimes the desires, the goals, the things that Thanos is working towards, sometimes those can align with heroic people, right? Like Thanos may indeed still want to rule the galaxy or the universe, but in order to do that, he can't have the Magus around because the Magus is too powerful. So, you know, it goes back to that old saying, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So great stuff from Starlin. Of course, the art, this is Starlin at the height of his powers. It's dynamic. It's wonderfully psychedelic at times, like when the Magus distorts reality. And you cannot deny the impact of Starlin's art and his poses and how imposing he makes Thanos. He's much more squat here, kind of like as he first appeared in Iron Man 55 and really throughout the run of Captain Marvel. I think eventually he gets a little taller, Nick, and he's still big and imposing, but he's not quite so short and broad as he originally first is drawn by Thanos. But this is the beginning of that relationship. You know, it's a classic relationship of Adam Warlock and Thanos that we've seen throughout the years, even up into modern times. This is where it all begins. So a great start, and it's great to see these classic stories and visit them once again, because, you know, I'm a huge Jim Starlin fan. We've had him on the show a couple of times, and to see the beginning of this story of Thanos and Adam Warlock, where their destinies or lives or whatever you want to call it start to intertwine, is great. It's great stuff. It's really awesome. So that's going to do it for this episode. As always, I want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.